Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode 14.
Got this force coming through in my blood, in my veins. It's a current of love, a chorus.
This week we have our minor league roundup, followed by the conversation with Chris King, a member of the Baseball Prospectus prospect team, coming to us from Dunedin Clearwater area in Florida. So sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. And now, the minor league roundup. The Buffalo Bisons have closed the gap on the Pawtucket Red Sox and the Norfolk Tides, both of whom are tied at the top of the International League wildcard race, a game and a half ahead of the Bisons, who sit at 59-57 going into tonight's doubleheader with the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders. They've actually gained ground, despite a losing 2-3 record since the last podcast. Kevin Pillar, who has cooled off significantly, is now the team's batting leader, although he doesn't have enough at-bats to qualify for the league lead, with a .299 batting average. Shortstop Ryan Goins has been fairly consistent so far this season and is now hitting a very respectable .272, but could have a better OBP, which sits at .323. Goins has 22 doubles, a triple, and a home run, showing some decent extra base pop. Anthony Goes has had 3 multi-hit games in his last 10 and has started to steal bases again, swiping 1 in each of his last 4 games without being caught. Since the last podcast, the New Hampshire Fisher Cats are also 2-3 and are now 3 games behind the Trenton Thunder for second place and the second playoff spot in the Eastern Division with a 55-59 record. The pitching has been going well for the Cats, with Marcus Stroman and Sean Nolan really getting the job done, and with Kyle Drabek and Drew Hutchison starting to get back into the swing of things after Tommy John surgeries. Coming off the DL has been Kenny Wilson, the center fielder who has hit .290 since returning to New Hampshire. Andy Burns has been hitting the ball hard, putting together back-to-back 2-hit games, and has a double and a triple this week. It's hard to tell if he's going to be able to cut down on his strikeouts over the last few weeks of the season, but the signs are good that Burns is adjusting to one of the toughest levels of professional baseball, and will be able to come back strong in 2014. The Dunedin Blue Jays have been pretty bad in the second half of the season, with a 16-27 record after going 0-5 since the last podcast. Number one prospect Aaron Sanchez came out of last night's game in the first inning, and reports were that it was due to a blister. The bats have been very quiet other than Casey Hobson, but shortstop Shane Opitz has been an interesting story so far. Starting the year in Lansing, where he hit .370 in 15 games, he was mostly seen as a backup for a little while in Dunedin, but his bat has moved him into a starting role. In his last 10 games, he has been held hitless in only 2 of them, and he is hitting .310 on the season with a .363 on-base percentage. While there doesn't seem to be a lot of pop in his bat, Opitz seems to just hit the ball and find holes. BC native Mike Krause is also having a solid season after a disappointing one last year that saw him demoted back to Lansing. Krause is now hitting .256 with a very good .353 OBP and a .380 slugging percentage. He's hit 15 doubles and 4 home runs, but I think there's more power in that bat than is coming through in the games. He's also had 18 stolen bases, which shows the big center fielder's speed as well. The Lansing Lugnuts have been playing better in the last week, going 4-3 since the last podcast, and the pitching staff has not given up more than 3 runs in any game. The Nuts are a half a game out of last place in the Eastern Division of the Midwest League, with an 18-28 second-half record. One minor note for the Lugnuts: starting pitcher Roberto Osuna, the consensus number 2 prospect for the Toronto Blue Jays organization, has undergone his Tommy John surgery and is gone for the rest of the year and probably won't be back until July or August of next year. 2 of the newest Lugnuts, Daniel Klein and Jordan Leland, have been making adjustments to the Midwest League very well. Klein is hitting far better than he was in Vancouver, going 8-25 for a .320 average, with 4 doubles and a home run in Lansing. He has taken to the higher league immediately, and hopefully he can continue to thrive in the Midwest League. Jordan Leland had a rough start to his Lansing career after dominating the Northwest League, but his bat has really come around lately, hitting in 7 of his last 8 games, and has started to hit some extra base hits. He has 1 double, 1 triple, and 1 home run. He's hitting .324 over his last 10 games and has brought his average up in Lansing to .245 overall. The Vancouver Canadiens are currently 7-6 in the second half, sitting one game behind the Everett Aquasox in the North Division of the Northwest League. They've won all three games since the last podcast and return tonight from their All-Star break. While most of this minor league roundup is spent talking about hitting, two newcomers to the Canadiens, Canadian-born pitchers Shane Dawson and Tom Robson, have continued to be dominant in their appearances for Vancouver. Dawson hasn't given up a run in 9 innings and has struck out 15 batters with just 2 walks, and Robson has thrown 11 2/3 innings with just 1 earned run, 2 walks, and 10 strikeouts. The Bluefield Blue Jays have gone 5-1 since the last podcast and lead their division in the Appalachian League by 2 games over the Pulaski Mariners and are a virtual lock for the playoffs. Outfielder Nico Taylor has been pounding the ball since his demotion from Vancouver with 5 doubles and 2 home runs in Bluefield. Shortstop Dowell Lugo has been on fire with hits in every game except for one this week, including a monstrous 2-game stretch in which he went 8-for-9. The 18-year-old Dominican has been showing extra base power with 10 doubles, 2 triples, and 6 home runs this year. Third baseman Mitch Ney is one of the most exciting players on this team, hitting in every game except for one in the past 10. He's hit .400 over that stretch and .318 on the season with 8 doubles and 5 home runs. Showing a lot of maturity at the plate, Ney has 20 walks and 24 strikeouts on the season. The GCL Blue Jays went 1-4 since the last podcast, and they sit in last place in the Northwest Division of the Gulf Coast League with a 17-23 record. We'll actually wrap up this minor league report here, and stay tuned for more GCL talk in the conversation with Baseball Prospectus writer Chris King. Welcome back to the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'm here joined from Northwestern Florida, the Gulf Coast, by Chris King. Chris is a member of the Baseball Prospectus prospect team, and he writes for them. And part of his portfolio is the Toronto Blue Jays prospects down in Dunedin, both for the Gulf Coast League and for the Florida State League. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mike. Glad to be here.
Great. So I think I want to get started by talking about the GCL Blue Jays, mainly because it's the one level of ball that I think most Blue Jays fans have the least access to, despite the fact that games are generally free and played just about every day in the afternoons in Dunedin at the Bobby Maddox training facility. These are guys that are really young. It's their first year, mostly it's their first year of professional baseball. And, we really don't hear from them a lot, partially because they're so far from Toronto. So what can you tell us about the whole GCL team, the GCL league, and those Blue Jays?
As far as the league goes, like you said, it's just rookie ball, a lot of first year draft players and then international guys. As far as the league goes itself, games are 12 o'clock every day, right in the middle of the hot Florida afternoon. Saturdays they play at 10 a.m. And you can see, I think it kind of gets to these kids towards the end of the summer. Some long bus rides, a couple hours over to Orlando and Kissimmee where the Astros and Braves facilities are. And especially those Saturday mornings, I mean, they gotta be up about 6:30 a.m. to hop on the bus and get over there for a 10 a.m. game. So that's kind of what the life of a rookie ball player is all about.
Well, and for us, you know, here in Toronto or elsewhere around Canada and the United States who are following some of these players, all we see are the stats. And I've been told by a lot of people that GCL stats really don't mean a heck of a lot. What do you think they might mean by that?
I know it's pretty hard to hit in this league because you got a lot of first-year pitchers and coupled on top of the umpires whose strike zones are – I mean, couldn't even say there is a traditional strike zone in this league. It's all over the place. So it puts a little strain on these hitters to kind of zone in on what is a strike, what they should be swinging at, what they shouldn't be swinging at, because it changes every single day. And on a much bigger scale than you see in major league games or even, you know, double A or triple A, it's pretty wild, the strike zones they got to put up with. So I think that has a lot to do with the offensive numbers, and then, you know, some sloppy defense, and it's just a learning spot for a lot of these guys.
So what is the real benefit if a lot of these players are maybe not putting up the kinds of stats that you might like to see? What is the benefit to the players in this league?
Just getting accustomed to pro ball and better competition, being a part of a pro organization. And a lot, you know, I like the mesh, especially down here in the GCL, the mesh to the Latin American players and the American kids, how they can kind of interact, and some bit of a language barrier there with a lot of them. And, you know, just a lot to take in, especially for the kids coming here out of country. It's quite a culture shock for a lot of them, I'm sure.
Right, and the Blue Jays, especially in the past several years, have really been mining Latin America for players, going after some big bonus kids in Venezuela, in the Dominican Republic, elsewhere. And I think a lot of those players that are really highly touted aren't in the GCL this year. A lot of them are in Bluefield, but there is particularly one in the GCL that's really lighting things on fire that I'm sure you've seen.
Yes, yes, sir. Mr. Barreto, I believe you're speaking of.
He's exactly the one I'm speaking of.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions about him. even the past 2 days, his opposite field approach is unbelievable. His kid's only 17. And the swings he puts on these balls, I mean, it's very, very, very advanced. He can drive a ball with power to just about any field. Not a big home run guy, but he's a gap-to-gap kind of kid. And it seems like teams have been trying to pitch him away, and he's been more than happy with that. He just drops the barrel and takes it into right field.
Now, he's coming out of Venezuela, and it seems like he's got a little bit more plate discipline than some of the other Latin American kids. He has struck out 32 times, as I see here, which is not low, but it's not horrible.
Yeah, it's nothing alarming.
But he's walked 12 times, which compared to some other guys like Dowell Lugo, who's playing one level above him in Bluefield, that's actually pretty good.
Yes, for sure. I noticed the beginning of the season, he was much more patient with his approach. I don't know if it's something the Blue Jays told him, you know, maybe start swinging more or something like that, because he has been swinging a lot more than he was first maybe month of the season. But it's hasn't changed his game at all. I mean, he might strike out here and there, but, you know, he's consistently making really solid contact.
Now,
very impressive.
Now, I kind of have a theory that when a hitter feels like he's really hitting well, he's going to be a lot more aggressive at the plate and be less likely to want to work those walks and be more selective when he feels like he can hit just about any type of pitch, you know, if not, you know, hit it out of the park, but certainly drive it and hit it hard somewhere.
Oh, for sure. And that's a very good point. As he's gone around after the month of the season, he's seen just about every team, every pitcher he's going to face. And I'm sure his confidence was sky high. And he came out on fire. And, I mean, I think he's sitting, around 280 right now. He got it back up to, I think he dipped down in the 270s as average. But he's got him back on the horse here. And just every day is just something new. You're like, man, this kid, can't believe this kid's 17 years old.
So we should definitely look to see him in Bluefield for next year.
I would imagine, yep.
Now, the one question that a lot of people have is his defense. It seems that he's making a lot of errors, and I know he's a very young player, and it's also a very young league. Is the number of errors an indication that he's probably not going to end up at shortstop in the long run?
Yeah, it seems to be the popular opinion that, and mine as well, that he's not a shortstop. You can just kind of see his footwork's a little sloppy at times. His arm's good enough for the position, but he just doesn't have a real natural feel for it. Think he could work okay at second. Most people believe he's a center fielder in the future. Time will tell with that. But in the past, probably about 10 days or 10 games, I should say, he's really made some solid improvements defensively. there was a short span there where a ball was hit to shortstop. Everyone's just kind of holding their breath, like, oh boy, here we go. And he's fielding the ball cleanly. His hands look like he's a little more soft now. And his throat, his arm and throws are much more accurate. Cut down on the errors big time. Not saying he's going to stick it short or anything like that, but he is showing signs of improvement, and that's all you can ask for a kid his age.
Well, exactly, and that's exactly what we want to see. I know there are other players who are in the organization at higher levels who are who have had issues both with plate discipline and fielding that haven't seemed to take those steps throughout a season and from season to season.
Yeah, for sure. I saw Lugo last year a little bit. His bat is very impressive as well, but I'd put Barreto's ahead of his for sure. Defensively, Lugo's better. But that bat's going to carry him, man. It's his meal ticket.
Right. Well, let's talk about somebody who pitched today that I think he's a great story. I don't know how much longer he's going to be with the team, and that is Chris Rowley.
Okay. And, yeah, today was the first time I saw him was today.
And from what I've read about him, he's a guy that was drafted out of West Point, the Army Army College, and he's going to be headed back in September to complete his military service. But he has just been dominating the GCL, has a lot more control than a lot of people that we see in that league, and has really been just a dominant force.
Yeah, you get that a lot, the more control with these older kids. I believe he's going to be turning 23 here, I want to say next week. I could be wrong about that.
No, that is correct.
Okay, yeah, I thought I heard you talking about him after the game. Yeah, his control is lights out. He's pretty intense kid on the mound. I mean, it's his army in him, but real high effort kind of delivery. But he's pounding the strike zone and mixes in his pitch as well. Pitching backwards a little bit today, which is really impressive in the GCL, starting kids off with a breaking ball and then playing that off his fastball.
So, I mean, again, it's hard to try to figure out if there's going to be any future for him, even in professional baseball, particularly
right.
because he's going to have to serve his military service for a couple of years, unless they make an exception for him. And I know that some other players that the Blue Jays have drafted out of military academies haven't had those exceptions made.
Right. Yeah, I'm not too familiar how that stuff kind of works, but I've always been under the impression that you have to be almost elite status kind of athlete or prospect to get those kind of things. But he's already 22, about to be 23. Take a couple years away for military service. It'd be a pretty amazing story if he was able to make it. But
well, at least he'll probably be in pretty good shape when he comes back.
That's for sure.
All right, let's move on to some of the other hitters.
Okay.
It's an interesting bunch, I think, in the GCL for the Blue Jays. Another one of these college players who's been really also tearing up the league is Thomas Collins III. I hear he goes by Boomer Collins.
Boomer!
And he was an undrafted free agent by the Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been pretty much their best hitter, other than Barreto. He's been batting usually in the two or three hole every day. Another contact guy. He's got some pop in the bat. What's really impressive about him is his defense. I mean, this kid covers some ground out in the outfield. They have him bouncing between left and center, depending on who else is in the lineup that day. But he's very good in either spot. He's got the arm for either position as well. And I'm trying to, what is he sitting about? 320, I believe, heading into today. Somewhere in that area. He's been sitting around all for a few weeks now. But yeah, kicking, he's got some bad in him.
Yeah, and the big question, I guess, and I don't know if you can answer this, is what's he doing in the Gulf Coast League? He's 21 or 22 by now, and again, another college age free agent. And I think he's already shown that he can hit the ball at that level. Why not move him somewhere else? Is it just a numbers game?
Yeah, that's could be very well what it is. You say they don't really tend to keep kids that old that are doing that well down at this level too long. He's been here all season, so I couldn't really speak to their thinking on that. But I don't know. I'd like to see him move up and see what he can do at the next level.
All right. And staying on the hitters, the Blue Jays team hasn't been hitting all that well, but they broke out today
for yes, they did.
10 runs, 13 hits.
Yeah, they had a
yeah, so big, what can you tell me about the guys that you saw hitting the ball today?
Today was pretty much all came in one inning. It was quite the contrast to yesterday where the Yankees jumped on you guys in the eighth inning. And today, the eighth inning was the Blue Jays' day. I think they scored, I think, four runs on about four hardly hit balls. Let's see, who had the big day? Barreto was 1-for-4, an RBI triple. He absolutely smoked one to center. Was able to get to third on that pretty easily. Rowdy Tellez had his best game at the plate. I know you're kind of curious. I get a lot of questions about him on Twitter as well. He was 2-for-4 today with a couple RBIs. Gabriel Cenas was 2-for-3. Jansen, one of my favorite players down there, and I love watching this kid play every day. Dan Jansen, your catcher, he was 3-for-4, 2 RBIs, and he just, I hate to use the cliche, but the ball sounds different coming off his bat a lot of the times. Even on just a regular base hit, it's loud. It's really loud. Working on him, they got Sal Fasano working with him pretty well, getting his catching mechanics a little better, tightening up his game behind the plate defensively. But he's got some promise. I really like what I'm seeing from him.
And so just to let our listeners know, Dan Jansen was, I think, a 16th round pick this year. He's a high school kid. One of the few high school position players to actually sign with the Blue Jays this year. And I've seen not only some of your reports, but some other reports that have said that he's a guy that people need to keep an eye on as a catcher coming up through the system.
Yeah, absolutely. He stood out from pretty much the first day I saw him. Just every day he does something to get your attention every single game. Whether it's making a, you know, throwing a runner out at second, trying to steal, or just murdering a baseball somewhere.
Well, that's fantastic. It's good to hear. I know, I haven't been critical of the Blue Jays sort of draft strategies for catchers, but they do seem to have a pattern, and that's taking good defensive players late in the draft out of college who will be able to play well on defense, but generally don't hit well or don't hit well for power. So it's good to know that, beneath AJ Jimenez, who is, I guess, the highest level prospect yes. catcher in the system, down to Santiago Nesi, who's mm-hmm. probably the next guy. There's somebody coming up, someone that's young that will be able to move through the system and have some upside.
Yeah, for sure. I really like this kid a lot. I think you guys might have stumbled onto something. He's definitely got a ways to go behind the plate. He's a little stiff with his receiving, kind of slow on his pop times, but he's got a strong arm, and, you know, like I said, Sal Fasano was a great teacher. You guys did well by getting him as one of your coaches down here.
Yeah, and I think that was his choice to be the catching coordinator. In fact, he was the manager of the AA team for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
But another player who's actually, and we'll talk about Rowdy Tellez in a second, but another guy who's really been hitting the ball well lately is Gabriel Cenas. Another, mm-hmm. I think he's Dominican or Venezuelan. He seems to have a lot of raw power. He hits a lot of extra base hits. He's got yep. 7 doubles, 2 home runs, and a triple this year.
Had another triple today.
And triple today. So yep. this is his second year in the Gulf Coast League. So it's looking like maybe things are finally clicking for him. He's a little bit older. He's not quite 20 yet. He's still 19. What have you seen out of him? He's listed as a catcher, but I don't think I've ever seen him play that position in box scores. I think
yeah.
he's mostly been a DH.
Yeah, he's been DH'ing or first base. Little raw at first base. He made some nice improvements. He was making a lot of really stupid, silly errors at the beginning of the season. I don't want to say stupid, but just kind of mental lapse kind of thing. Just kind of nonchalant in some catches and dropping a ball or something like that. But he's tightened that up and been playing okay, but pretty much DH'ing on a regular basis, and He's been producing. He's very much improved from last year. There's a lot of swing and miss, really aggressive. Didn't seem like he recognized the pitches too well coming out of the pitcher's hand. Yeah. But, yeah, he's like a whole different player this year. Really like the progress he's making.
Well, that's great to hear. And so how about another first baseman, Rowdy Tellez? And everybody speaks glowingly of his power. He hasn't really had a chance to show it just yet in professional baseball. What have you seen out of him?
I haven't. Well, I've seen the power pregame and during batting practices and stuff like that, but hasn't really translated into game action at all. He's an enormous kid. He's a big dude, man. It's kind of scary. There's kids in high school his size, but he's kind of slow with his swing. He's kind of long. He's got some big uppercut in there. Looked really good today, though. He was trying to stay level, driving the ball, not really, you know, going for the big mash like it seemed like he was doing at first. Just kind of leveling off that swing is going to help him a ton, because all he's got to do is barrel one up and it's going to go.
So you think the Blue Jays are really working with him on cleaning up the mechanics before they really expect to see much power from him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how they cannot do that. Like his first couple ABs, I think he debuted a couple weeks ago. He made his debut, and his first couple games I saw him just trying to basically hit a home run every time. It looked like really violent swing and uppercutting, a lot of lazy pop-ups, stuff like that, or rolling over on a pitch, trying to pull a pitch on the outside, trying to pull it to right field. But he's doing a little bit better. I'm not still not seeing that power translate into game time yet, though, so something to keep my eye open for.
Well, and with young players, that can take some time, although
For sure.
That's truly the test of the player, because I've also seen young players with huge power in batting practice that just don't translate it into game situations over several years, and they usually end up out of a job fairly quickly.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of guys with raw power. Guys can rip batting practice bombs for days, but when you step in the box against live pitching, it's a whole new ball game.
Absolutely. Is there anybody else among the hitters that you've seen that maybe opened your eyes a lot or was a little bit disappointing to you?
Edwin Fuentes caught my eye a little bit this season. Mainly he started with his glove. This kid can play third base. I mean, he's a web gem kind of kid at third every game. He's doing something crazy. And he's been swinging a much better bat. Cut down on the strikeouts, although he did have two today. Yeah, he's definitely a kid making strides, and I know he works hard. They definitely praise his work ethic down here. So he's kind of a kid I'd keep tabs on for sure.
Definitely, and he appears to be just about to turn 19, so he's still fairly young.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this whole team's pretty young, say, you know, minus Boomer Collins, but yeah. I like what I'm saying.
All right. And the Blue Jays have several fairly big names there on the pitching side as well. The first one that I'm sure you're asked about all the time, and I bet you wish you had better news to report, was Matt Smorrell, the giant lefty, 6'8" lefty that the Blue Jays selected, I believe, in the second round last year. Well, his stats don't look good. His ERA is almost 10. He's walked 20 batters in 12 and two-thirds innings, but are there positives that we can take? Those of us who dream on a gigantic Randy Johnson clone, perhaps coming to Toronto in the future.
I wouldn't go that crazy, but he definitely first couple times out, he was still working through a little finger issue. I was told that might have affected a little bit. His velocity was kind of sitting right around 90 for about 3 or 4 appearances, and then all of a sudden he started throwing 94 again and was snapping that slider. Really looked like he was turning a corner. Command was looking much better. He was pumping the fastball. He's moving it in and out, up and down. And last two times I've seen him, he's kind of taken some steps back as far as command wise. The velocity's been fine. He's keeping that in the mid 90s. But just consistent locations, you know, going to haunt this kid. And I don't know if his fingers still bother him or not. You know, they're not going to tell me that, but it doesn't look like he's, you know, velocity's there. I don't know. Something mechanically or...
Okay. Well, let's go. Well, hopefully everything will work out for Smorl. Again, he's still fairly young and from what I've heard, it takes, especially really tall pitchers, it can definitely take them a few more years than some other pitchers to be able to find the mechanics because there's so many moving parts.
Yeah, when he's landing on that front foot, you can tell he's not always in the same spot. Sometimes he's got his front leg pointed one direction, next time it's the other direction, but if he can get that leg driving straight down towards the catcher, he's going to be dangerous.
Well, let's go from one second rounder to another. Clinton Holland was the second round pick this year and signed for a lot under slot because there was some damage shown in an MRI, but he is pitching. And
pitching well.
The stats, he hasn't given up a run yet. He's only given up one hit and one walk in 8 innings and struck out 7. And how about you tell us a little bit about how he's going about doing that?
He's got a 4-pitch mix. He's got a fastball. It's a mid-90s fastball, 92, 94. I've seen it hit 95 a couple times. He's got a knuckle curveball. And he throws a slider and not a great changeup, but, you know, definitely has a feel for it, at least. But anytime you get a kid down here with 4 pitches that he can throw for strikes on a consistent basis, he's going to produce. And he's been doing that so far. I've seen his last 2 appearances, and it's been very impressive.
So he's the type of guy that, although the Blue Jays will probably be very careful adding innings to him, to his arm, that he may have the maturity in terms of the way he pitches as somebody like Roberto Osuna who could easily and did easily go up against some older competition when he was quite young.
Yeah, for sure. And I was able to talk with him a little bit after the game today. And just talking to him, you can tell he's a different kind of kid. He's got a good head on his shoulders. And he understands how to be a pitcher. He's not just out there throwing. He knows his pitches, he knows when to throw them, you know, righty versus lefty, what he wants to do. He's got a really good plan of attack. And so, you don't really hear about that too much down here in the GCL.
No, I actually got a very good sense of that when I talked to Marcus Stroman, but Stroman is in AA and Stroman has 4 years of college under his belt as well.
Yeah. And Duke guy, but yeah, I was very impressed with what I've seen from Holland, and even speaking with him today is even more impressed.
Well, that's terrific news to hear that the Blue Jays may have gotten themselves a real sleeper type of guy. As long as he can stay healthy and keep throwing that ball, I think it's a lot more rare for a team to find a pitcher that young with a sense for pitching than it is to have a guy with a great arm and say, you know what, we can teach him the pitching. Sometimes they just never learn it.
Yep, for sure. And a lot of guys just want to come out and go, I can throw 95, and they just come out and let it rip and never really think about the pitching side of it. But he's there. He knows what he wants to do, and so far he's been able to go out there and do it.
Well, that's terrific. And another guy that I'm sure you're getting a lot of questions about on Twitter is Jacob Brents, or Jake Brents, as he's called. He's made a few appearances since signing, and I think you said you saw him yesterday a little bit.
I did. He pitched an inning yesterday. It was much better than I saw. I was there for his pro debut, and I believe he failed to record an out that day. And it was another weird situation. He was struggling. He couldn't locate anything. The trainers came out and took what appeared they were looking at his hand or his finger. I didn't know what exactly they were looking at. But they left him in the game and didn't do too well, but I don't know if it was a blister or something, but I figured, you know, if it was something serious, they obviously would have pulled him and be very cautious down here with him. But yesterday he was much, much better. The first 2 guys got on, I think a walk and a hit or something like that. And it was a 1-0 game at the time. The Yankees get the first two guys on base, and he really buckled down, started locating that fastball. He was jamming guys, saw a couple bats off. And Right now he's only throwing his fastball. He hasn't really shown a changeup or any type of breaking ball yet.
Now from the reading I've done about Brents online is that he's come to pitching fairly recently in the past couple of years as a big lefty who throws real hard. And otherwise he was actually, I think, an outfielder, somebody said, in high school. So do you think the Blue Jays are really sort of having him work more on his fastball command right now? Because he still is maybe further behind some of the other pitchers in his development.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, they're not going to rush him out here, and they've only been using him in one inning spurts. They haven't let him go more than that. He's on a pretty tight pitch count right now. And, you know, just pumping that fastball. He's sitting 94 the other day consistently. I'd like to see some type of second and third pitch coming out soon, though.
Well, I'm sure the Blue Jays want to see that, too.
Oh, absolutely.
But,
yeah, he's got a nice frame. He's almost, they say you got him listed at 6'2". I see him out there. He looks closer to 6'3" to me.
Well, again, you know.
Get a 6'3", 200-pound lefty throwing 95 out there and probably gain a couple miles an hour as he gets a little bit stronger. He's got a pretty good weapon, but his command's been all over the place, although he's definitely shown, took a nice stride and step in the right direction yesterday.
Well, that's great. And again, it's still early days, I believe. Got 3 appearances and 2 innings pitched. So, yep. You know, I'm sure he'll be out there in fall instructs his innings in as well.
Yeah, he looked like a completely different kid, just his body language on the mound. There's probably some nerves and everything going into his debut. And then when you go out there and you struggle, you might get down on yourself, beat yourself up a little bit. But it was nice to see him come out, and especially after letting the two first batters get on there and a 1-0 game. Probably, I think it was about the 6th or 7th inning they brought him in and able to buckle down and get out of that jam unscathed. That's what you like to see.
Well, that is what you like to see. What can you tell us about some of the other pitchers? I mean, just briefly, there's several guys, especially some of the guys who've really logged some innings already, who are coming up from the Dominican Summer League, like Jesus Tinoco and Alejandro Solarte, Francisco Diaz. These are some guys who pitched pretty well in the Dominican Summer League who are now getting their first exposure. I guess there's always going to be a nice group of Dominicans and Venezuelans in the in the camp. So are any of those standing out in your mind?
Yeah, I haven't seen Tinoco or Diaz. Solarte kind of caught my attention the other day. I caught one of his starts. Actually, not a start, but one of his appearances. He's throwing about 87, 89, but he's got a lot of deception in his delivery. So it's coming and the ball explodes out of his hand. Looks like it's 93 coming out of his hand. But yeah, he's got that. He's got a nice pitcher's body, something you definitely like to see. He's a big kid. Yeah, he's got a nice feel for a changeup too. No, so I'm trying to find him on my notes here real quick. Yeah, he's got good deception. There's movement on the fastball too. He's got some arm side run on that thing, so there is life coming out of it as well. And changeup's nothing to write home about right now, but he's shown that he can throw it. He's got a feel for it. Slowing his body down a little bit when he does throw it, but something to keep an eye on though, for sure, if you're a Blue Jays fan.
All right, and I'm just going to ask you one last guy, and if you want, I know you do get to some Florida State League games, so if there's anybody that you want to talk about from the Dunedin Blue Jays from the Florida State League, please be my guest. But I just want to ask you about a guy that people have been fairly high on up until this year, and this year there's not really a lot of talk about Tyler Gonzalez, who I believe is also a second-round pick or a compensation round pick, and really, I think this is now his second year in the Gulf Coast League.
No.
And he really hasn't progressed at all.
No, I haven't even seen him throw in a while. I noticed he was up today in the bullpen during the game. I don't think they're bringing him, you know, I think it was more of a bullpen session than having him come in. it's kind of hard to tell. It was kind of far away from the, where they have their pitchers during the game. But, yeah, he's all arm, man. He's a real high effort kid. And he snaps the arm. He throws hard. And there's no doubting that. He's in the mid or upper 90s with that fastball, but that's about all he's got at this point.
Yeah, and it looks like from his numbers this year that he's really struggling with his command. Last year, interestingly, he only had 4 walks in 15 innings, whereas this year he's walked 10 already in just over 9.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with him, but like I say, I haven't seen him at all. I'm at that complex pretty much every game, and I have not seen him.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, and is there anyone you've noticed at the the Florida State League Blue Jays? I know it's an older team, and the one mm-hmm. prospect, or the, one of the prospects that people were talking about has already been promoted out of there, and that was Andy Burns.
Yeah.
But you do still have Aaron Sanchez there, and what have you seen out of Sanchez? He's had a little bit of a rough go the last little while.
Mm-hmm. I caught him probably about 2 weeks ago, and the Twins Farm Club was here with Byron Buxton. So I went over and wanted to see that matchup there. And Sanchez, I guess he was up for the challenge. I mean, he came in, the sequence of pitches he threw Buxton, it was impressive. I think it was like 97, 98, 99. Then he threw a 80-mile-an-hour changeup. And then he came back with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
Wow.
And, yeah, it was something you like to see from him, be a little more bulldog mentality out there. He tends to nibble a little bit and get cute. Just, you know, use your stuff, man. You got the pitches. Just go after these guys.
And I have heard via Tyler Murray, the Dunedin Blue Jays play-by-play announcer,
mm-hmm.
that his secondary stuff is actually really developing well.
Yeah, it is. I think I misspoke when I said he threw him an 80-mile-an-hour changeup. His changeup's sitting around 90 these days. The 80-mile-an-hour is a slider. But it's coming along really well, man. He could be a beast. He could be. I just think a lot of it's his mentality right now. Just kind of dances around hitters at certain spots of a game, and I feel like you should just go after him and attack him with the heat. And that slider is definitely improving.
There's one other guy that you may have seen that I'd want to ask you about. He's one of the few younger players on that Dunedin Florida State League team, is Casey Hobson. And Casey, I think he's about 22 now, and he was on fire. He was on fire for about a week and cooled off a bit, but he's been hitting for a lot of power, but his batting average is still around 215 to 220. Is there anything you see in his swing or in his approach that is making the difference? Because last year or the last 2 years, he probably hit about 270, 275 in Lansing. So this year the power has really stepped up, but the batting average, the contact stats haven't really followed.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't really get a chance to see him last year too much. So I can't really speak as far, you know, what has changed with his swing from what I'm seeing this year. But yeah, there was a stretch there. I mean, it was unbelievable. I talk with Bill Christie, does the in-house announcing at the stadium over there. He's the play-by-play guy for the PA system. And he would text me or send a tweet like, Hobson, this guy. The stretch he was on, I think he had like 13 RBIs in like 4 games or something. It was crazy. But yeah, I don't know. I honestly couldn't really speak to that as far as mechanically, you know.
Right.
I just haven't seen him anything to compare and contrast from last year to this year.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that's going to be it. Thanks for joining us. Member of the Baseball Prospectus prospect team. So that's Chris King. You can follow him on Twitter at StatsKing, StatsKing. That wraps it up for episode number 14 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Chris King, a member of the Baseball Prospectus prospect team, for joining us. I'd also like to thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Jays From Away. Come on back next week and go Jays go.